I'm afraid your outfit's too tight. That's what I'm afraid of. If I hear those noises, I say to myself, I must put on a looser-fitting outfit. That's otherworldly. That's not even from music. That's from another planet. Hi, everybody.
Shake it up, baby.
I'm Bill, and that woman in pain, that's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200. If you have a cure for whatever Wendy has, please call us immediately. Please call us fast. Very quickly, Kevin has some good news about his family. Kevin, our producer, told me some very good news about his family today.
Oh, yeah. My sister just
Kevin, you forgot already?
It's wow. New. How am I supposed to remember?
All right.
She had another baby.
Another baby.
Yeah. I didn't even know she was pregnant.
She wasn't pregnant.
That's
she just
amazing.
Had a baby on a dare. Somebody dared her to have a baby, and she did.
Yeah.
So you're an uncle again.
Yeah. It's getting old now at this
Third
point.
Third time coming already. Yeah. Third time.
It's boy or girl?
Little girl. Michaela.
Love it.
Isn't that a nice name?
Yes.
Can you spell it?
I think it's an M-I-C-A-E-L-A, I think.
Capital M.
Well, yeah, there's that.
So is it yes or
okay,
no question?
Alex Trebek.
What, Steve?
So there's a yes or no question, and I think the answer was no.
He spelled it correctly.
I think so.
Can I just tell you, everyone
there's
misspells.
There's more than one name. The A and the E are usually inverted, right, with Michael or Michaela?
Yes, I have a Michael, and a lot of times people will put E-A-L. It's A-E. I don't know why. Is it Latin? I don't know why it's spelled that way. But at this point, don't you know how to spell Michael? We've seen it all over the world forever.
But I know it messes people up.
All the time.
But it shouldn't. But Michaela's one of those names, like, I'll throw down $1,000 that you didn't know any Michaelas growing up, did you? I didn't have any in my class. Steve, you probably didn't have any.
No, I don't think
but
so.
But now that's...
I knew a Michaelina.
A Michaelina?
Mm-hmm. I went to high school
that's
with her.
That's exotic.
That's love that name.
Very exotic.
But yeah, Michaela's very popular.
A very big emerging name.
But it is it's a multiple spell name,
right.
Too.
Yeah. Just like Steve.
Yeah. Well, a PHV.
Or Bill.
Right. Right. You can spell it 1,000 different ways. They'd all be wrong but one, but you could if you wanted to.
Well, congratulations.
That's such good news,
yeah,
Kevin.
Who are the siblings of Michaela?
Benjamin and Olivia.
Oh, I love that name, Olivia. Do they call him Benny, too?
Benjito.
Benjito.
Benjamin. Yeah, Benny. He's got all sorts of names.
Well, congratulations.
That's such good news.
I get to go see her tonight, I think, so we're excited.
We'll all go.
You want to come?
Yeah.
Well, everybody that's
fun.
Listening, yeah.
And
yeah.
We'll all head out there.
I'm speaking from people who have babies. Don't you sometimes forget how to hold them when someone has a baby and then you're like, they say, do you want to hold the baby? And I do, but then I kind of am
nervous.
Paranoid again.
You don't want to drop someone's baby.
Oh, and you got to support the head.
Yes.
You kind of forget all that.
Yes.
But when you had babies, you could have one on one arm. You had twins. You could have both of them.
Kevin, make a note of that if Michaela ever comes to the studio.
Don't let Wendy hold her.
No, I am very
Wendy
careful.
Wendy always puts, she'll spray butter all over her hands.
You got to balance the head.
You weren't listening. I said, I'm nervous, but I have to be very careful. You kind of forget how to do it. So I pick up the baby very gingerly.
Yeah.
And then
that's another name that we never heard.
Gingerly.
Now a lot of girls are named gingerly.
better than Mary Ann Lee.
Way better. Way better. But to your point, yes, because the last thing you want to do is have a mishap with someone's bit. You want to play it as by the book as you can. Right?
I just remember when I had Michael, A-E-L, we were left in the delivery room afterwards. All I wanted was a Big Mac. It was a real easy delivery, and I was hungry.
Yeah.
And the nurse gave him... to us, and both Jim and I didn't really know what to do.
Yeah.
And then changing a diaper, like how do you do that?
It's
weird.
Have to learn things fast.
I know.
Right?
And then it's totally second nature.
Right.
But I just and then of course I said to my mother-in-law, you know, she offered to come over and cook and hang out with us when we brought Michael home, and I had read somewhere that it's very important for the parents to be just with the baby to bond.
Oh yeah.
And all I know is about half an hour after we got home, Jim was on the phone with his mom begging her to come
over. Oh, is that right? Yeah.
We didn't know what to do. He's crying. I know. What do we do?
Syrup. Give that kid some syrup.
It's pretty exciting.
Oh, it's so exciting. Kevin, when you see, well, I know you haven't seen Michaela yet, but you've seen the other two, right?
Once or twice,
I showed you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So does that make you want to have kids more, or do you say to yourself, oh, I don't know if I'm ready for this?
Well, my sister actually came down to Florida with us at the beginning of July, and she was pregnant and had two little ones under the age of 5,
yeah.
And that makes me not want to have kids anytime soon.
Yeah.
She's got her hands full.
I always think that three is the number, and I'll explain myself. As soon as you have a third child, you are outnumbered.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Zone.
No more man-to-man defense.
Instead of man-to-man. And like one can be challenging and two can be challenging, but once you're outnumbered, you say to yourself, oh, no, we're going to lose a lot now. This is going to be dangerous now.
Yeah, but you stop caring about them as much because
yeah,
there's
I
so
guess.
Many of them.
You got a bunch of them.
Right. Well, you pick your one favorite, right?
And then right. You have to pick a favorite. Right. Yeah.
I love listening to men talk about babies.
And you have to let the favorite know that they're the right. favorite. And then you let the other ones know they're not the favorite.
Give
but
them
they
a
work
name,
a little harder.
Give them a nickname like Benjito or
Benjito,
something.
Benjito, right? Right. Right.
It's a sign.
Well, that's beautiful news, Kevin. Sorry.
That is such good news.
We're happy for you.
Very
yeah,
happy.
It's exciting.
We're all going to go out and see the baby tonight.
Yeah, you want to come, Steve?
Yeah,
definitely.
That'd right. be great.
I want to see Bertrand hold a baby.
Come on. I'm great with kids.
Babies?
I bet you. Yeah. Steve seems like somebody that would be great with kids.
Better than us,
you
I
don't
think.
Maybe better than us.
I'm more excited about somebody getting a new puppy. As I've mentioned before, I don't really like other people's kids. I just like my...
Kevin, there's another note to write down right
yeah.
there.
Okay, yeah, good
Whenever
point.
Whenever you need a babysitter, Wendy may not be your first call. You just don't like other people's kids. Do you tell other people you don't like their kids?
I don't dislike them. It's just, and I'm, you know what? I'm nicer to other people's kids than I am to my own.
Are you? Yeah.
And there's been a study that, you know, when your kid does something wrong, regardless of the age, pretend you're disciplining your neighbor's kid because you will do it differently.
Oh, yeah.
You're nicer. You're like... You just spilled Coke all over the table. Well, darn it, that's terrible.
Want some more? You're out of drink right. now. You're out of beverage. Let me get you some more. Yeah.
And
you have found that to be the way to play it, huh?
Yeah, it's hard to remember
nice
to do.
Yeah, I bet. I can imagine. All right, let's take a short break. We'll come back. We have plenty on today's show. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. This is a follow-up to a story that I don't think we talked about on the air. I remember this happening a couple of weeks or maybe months ago, and I don't know that we discussed it on air, but there was this mom and dad who would post YouTube videos of them being really mean to their kids and blaming their kids for things that their kids didn't do. Do you remember? Did you see any of these videos?
Is this when the dad broke the Xbox or something? Because there was another family that did that, just to watch the kid cry, and it was like a spare broken one.
I don't remember that one. The one that comes to mind, and I think it's even mentioned in the story, was they bought some invisible ink, which...
Parents are jerks.
I don't know why they still make invisible ink, but they do. So they went and they bought invisible ink, and they sprayed it all over their living room carpet, and then they woke their kids up and yelled at them for doing that, and their kids, of course, did not do that. Now, I think this may have stemmed from, I hate to say this, because I enjoy
you
this.
You love it, I hate it.
Jimmy Kimmel every year on Halloween has parents, you know, say to their kids that they've eaten all the Halloween candy.
Which, first of all, kids shouldn't be getting that upset about their candy.
They get furious.
Because, I mean, really, you could go to the store and buy more.
Right.
But they're kids. They don't know that.
But it shouldn't be. I know that you're always
I hate
revolted
it
by it.
Because you're supposed to trust your parent.
I know. But I think it's a good life lesson. Trust no one.
No, that is not a good
what a terrible
life lesson.
It's a great life lesson for the kids.
No
matter how much
you can't trust your parents.
No matter how much you think your parents are here to protect you, if you turn your back on them, they will steal your candy. That's a great life lesson for kids. A Maryland couple who gained internet infamy after a video of them playing an expletive-laced prank on their children.
Or expletive.
It should have been expletive. Take two.
Expletive.
Expletive.
Marai
Sweetcorn. I'll tell you, the English language, Wendy, not the easiest language. I wish I could do this in my foreign
That's
tongue.
That's why we're all going to be speaking in emojis soon.
I know. It's much easier. An expletive, for you rich people, laced prank on the children, went viral, may face up to 10 years in prison.
I heard about this. And
10
they
years.
Deserve, well, I mean, that is child abuse in a way.
It is. It
Come
kind
on.
Of is. Michael and Heather Martin have been charged with two counts each of neglect of a minor after making headlines back in April for posting a since-removed video to YouTube. Now, they say since-removed, but I watched it last night, so I don't know.
Well, it's removed
Was it reinstated?
From YouTube, but you can find it, you know,
in
other people
sources?
Share it.
Yeah, I guess.
Hey, once it's on the internet, people, it's going to be on the internet
forever. Yeah.
Expletive.
The password, the incorrect password. is expletive.
I'm just going to use that as a swear word from now on.
Right. Expletive you, pal. Wait, what? I think you said that wrong. And then hold up the wrong finger. Like hold up your, just hold up your fourth finger at somebody.
That'll get
How
them.
About this? Take this.
Did you used to think that meant something when you were a kid?
Yes.
I did too.
Well, the fourth finger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of did too.
Yeah. It's like a more subtle way of
Because our parents, you know, had they were abusing us by showing us that fourth finger.
Yep. The video posted on their channel, Daddy05, shows Heather Martin.
You've been there,
Wendy. You've been there. Shows Heather Martin spreading what she said was ink that would soon disappear, but she and her husband later then blamed two of the children for the stains. Now, the whole thing is done. They wake these kids up, and they bring them into the room, living room, and, of course, the carpeting, they've got nice carpeting that's just all in disarray because of the ink, and they're screaming at the kids and swearing at the kids, and the kids are crying. And then they later go, we fooled you.
Did you laugh?
No, I did not laugh. But if it was on Jimmy Kimmel, I would have. That's my line. That's my line of demarcation.
That really upsets me every year. I am an apologist for little children.
I know.
If I see kids crying, my heart aches. It literally aches. And it's sometimes probably a stupid reason they're crying, but...
It's the craziest thing. I can't watch a kid get harmed in a movie or a television show. It tears through me. But for some reason, when this is presented every year at Halloween, I enjoy it immensely. And I know that's a double standard.
I know
because
it is.
You know it strengthens them in your world. In your world, it's making them better.
Better people. More well-rounded. That's it, Steve.
That's
you nailed
lesson,
it.
Right.
Yeah, that's why. Both dad and stepmom can be heard cursing and shouting during the ordeal, which left their children in tears. You feel so bad. I don't know if you've seen it. You feel so bad for these kids.
But the swearing is what's the, you know, it's one thing to, listen, I've gotten mad at my kids. You guys probably have too when they've done something.
Yes, many times.
No, they're better for strangers. The stranger's always right. Remember that credo in our family. So everybody's nicer to strangers than they are to their own family members.
Yeah.
But I have yelled at them, but... I try not to swear and scream and go nuts like this was. And this wasn't even really being mad at them. This was just a terrible ruse.
I know.
Sometimes you can't, you know, hold it back and you get a little angry and, okay, you yell. But this is for a joke.
But see, I think, and I'm not trying to be on the side of the parents here because it obviously, it messed these kids up. But I think in their heads, they thought, once we tell them it was a gag, everything will be okay. But I don't know that it was okay.
Because they were too severe. They were in there yelling at them. So it's tough to recover. A little kid knows black or white at the beginning. It's like, I'm in trouble. I'm being good.
Right.
There's no like, they're missing the whole just kidding.
Right. That's
just
the problem.
Just kidding.
Right.
What does
it doesn't
that
make
mean?
Up for it. Look, it's for our funny YouTube channel. You've been pranked.
You've been exploited
for
our YouTube channel.
Right. Alan Funt just comes around the corner.
And punches them.
Right. Look, we brought in Funt. And yes, that's the first time anyone has said the name Alan Funt on the air in a long, long time. But I don't care.
And other person who did it was you.
Was me.
Several years ago.
I probably did. I kept my streak alive. I'm the Cal Ripken of Alan Funt. 1 month after the video surfaced, Michael Martin's children, 12-year-old Emma and 9-year-old Cody, were removed from the home
by Frederick County
officials and placed in the custody of their biological mother, Rose Hall. I bet she's thrilled, right? She thinks the kids are safe with her old husband and his new wife, and then this happens. I'm sure she's thrilled.
That makes me even sicker.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I'm not going to criticize every dad out there because there are some fantastic dads. There are some stay-at-home dads.
Right.
But this dad...
Not the best of the dads. No, I agree. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN. We're at 312-981-7200. Should you want to contact us during the program? Just a quick text, if I may. We were just talking about this mom and dad, not the best mom and dad in the world, who set up a YouTube channel in which they would prank their children, do horrible things, and then just tell them at the end they were just kidding. It didn't end well for them. 630 says, not everybody in 630, but one particular person said, I think somebody should prank Bill, me, and bring in a fake doctor who will give him a flu shot. That wouldn't be funny.
Maybe for us it would be.
Who was it who said the difference between comedy and tragedy is if I see somebody slip on a banana peel, that's comedy, but if it happens to me, that's tragedy.
I don't know, but it's true.
I think that's true. I think it's true. All right. Earlier, there was a tweet from Donald Trump expressing, again, his emotions about the statues, the Confederate statues that he called beautiful statues, and that he doesn't believe that they should be torn down. And I'm going to read to you in just a little bit Robert E. Lee's thoughts about Confederate monuments. He himself didn't think that putting up monuments to Confederate leaders was in anyone's best interest, which is very strange because he had to know at some point he himself would be immortalized in statue form. It says, this is from Yahoo. The violence that erupted in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend, in which one woman was killed and dozens more injured, stemmed from a protest led by white nationalists over the removal of the statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Debates about the removal of Confederate statues have been ongoing for years, and opponents of removing the monuments often decry such proposals as an attempt to erase history. However, it's often forgotten that Robert E. Lee himself, after the Civil War, opposed monuments, specifically those honoring Confederate war generals. This according to Jonathan Horn, who is a biographer of Robert E. Lee's. He told this to PBS. After the Civil War, Lee received several letters requesting support for the erection of Confederate memorials, according to Horn. In June of 1866, he wrote that a monument of one of his generals, that would be Stonewall Jackson, wasn't feasible at this time. In December that same year, he wrote of another proposed Confederate monument. Here's what he said. As regards to the erection of such a monument as is contemplated, my conviction is that however grateful it would be to the feelings of the South, the attempt in the present condition of the country would have the effect of retarding instead or of accelerating its accomplishment and of continuing, if not adding to the difficulties under which the Southern people labor. So he himself, Robert E. Lee, is saying, in doing this, you're going to make it harder, not easier.
I have mixed emotions, excuse me, about this. My mother-in-law is from Corinth, Mississippi. We traveled down there for her mother's funeral service.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of Civil War fighting going on in Corinth. And we went to the Battle of Corinth Museum, and there were a lot of sites that I saw, and I was like, that's really kind of cool. It happened there.
Right.
I don't know that I was taken aback by these statues. However, they don't offend me. That doesn't mean that they're not offending someone else.
I'm kind of with you. I don't think even though the statues are kind of part of the equation of what's gone on, it's by far not the biggest part of the equation. And I could understand where if you live in a place where there's a statue of something dark that happened and you have to look at it every day, I could understand where it would rile you a little bit. Definitely. There's no question about it. But I think the statues are so not only secondary, but so far removed from what the real problem has been lately. Don't you?
Yeah, I think they're being blamed for a lot of the problem. When I'm with you, the problem is bigger than the statues.
Right. But that said, I mean, I'm trying to think of the right analogy to express this. I was so fascinated. In Maryland, in Baltimore, in the middle of the night, two nights ago, they took down any statues that were kind of offensive to people. It's really smart the way it happened. I'm shocked. I don't think you could pull that off here in Chicago, although they removed an airport in the middle of the night. Nobody knew that was coming. But as I heard this story, I thought to myself, there had to be a lot of people in on this plan. How did the story not get leaked? I mean, it just happened.
And it was officials. It's not like somebody vandalized it.
Right.
And
right.
I have questions about this, and I'm being 100% honest here. I am kind of opposed to these monuments being up in places that didn't have action.
Right.
You know what I mean?
In Arizona, there's a bunch of statues in Arizona that honor Confederate generals and things, and Arizona wasn't in on that.
See, then I think that's kind of, that might be wrong. But to memorialize a battleground or something like that, it's like a museum.
Right. All right, now help me with this because I didn't know such a thing exists. I've been to the South a bunch of times, but I didn't visit any grave sites of fallen soldiers or anybody that participated in the Civil War. But they said in some of these cases, the statues would not be destroyed, but they'd be brought to those cemeteries of soldiers that fought in the Civil War. Is that better? Is that worse? Is it the same? The statues will still exist. I don't know what to make of that.
I don't either, Bill. I got to be honest with you. I really don't. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. And Craig's on the line. Hi, Craig.
Good morning, Wendy. Good morning, Bill.
Hi.
The statues ain't the problem. It's the hate that are in our hearts that are starting with the president. That's the problem in America. Not the statues. The statues aren't doing anything. You can change all the statues, change the name of parks. It's still the hatred in our hearts.
I'm kind of with you on that. I don't want to say it starts with the president. The president
the atmosphere
has done little.
Yeah, the is atmosphere, definitely yeah. hateful.
Yeah.
Okay. Every time he opens his mouth, he spews hatred. But that's beside the point. You got to start when you're young. Start in the classroom. Start teaching respect and niceness and loveliness. I don't remember all this hatred when I was young in school. I'm 55. I don't remember that. Seems like the last 10 years, 5 years, everything's gone to hell. Excuse my language.
I'm sorry.
Sure seems like it, Craig. Thank you very much for your call. Can we talk to Steve about this? Hi, Steve.
Hi, Wendy. I think there's totally different between statutes in public places and a battlefield where Americans died that gave us the country we have today. It's like if our fathers or grandfathers, depending on how old you are, went back to Normandy and saw the battlefield there. We saw it, but there was a statue of Rommel there. We wouldn't be very happy with that. That's
right.
About the equivalent.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That's the equivalent.
So these statues, in your opinion, then, what do you think, Steve? They should come down or should not come down?
I think they should come down. You could keep them in a Civil War museum that would reflect the generals of both sides. But when they're in public places, that means that the government, and that means the people, are saying these were great men for our country. Well, they were protecting a way of life that we now deem abhorrent.
But what about the argument? I'm not the first person to make this argument. Many people have in front of me that they were doing their job. They were told by somebody, you have to defend these rights and this land, and they were just doing their job. What do you make of that?
That was the defense at Nuremberg.
Right.
It worked then, shouldn't work now.
All right, that's true, isn't it?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for your thoughts on this. And 312-981-7200, are the monuments something that are offensive to you? I don't know. Looking at the battleground, we went to the Battle of Shiloh in Tennessee, the Battle of Corinth when I was in Mississippi, and it was impressive, and it didn't represent hate to me. It represented history.
Well, that's the argument on the other side of the coin is by taking these down, to some extent, you're hiding or blocking history. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know if that's true either. I have such mixed emotions on this, and that's why we need your help. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. We were talking about monuments that celebrate the Confederacy, Civil War. I just have mixed emotions on this. I don't know them to be disrespectful, but I'm not the one who is offended by these. We're trying to find out what your thoughts are. Alexander, how are you?
Good. You guys, how are you guys doing today?
Pretty
really good.
Yeah, the way I feel about it is, I'm just putting out that I'm black. I don't feel any hate towards a statue. I really can care less about a statue. It's more about the people that are in America today that have the hate in their heart. Like the other gentleman said, take it out of the public so that people that come from other countries don't say, oh, this is how these people feel about African-Americans or, you know, the racism in this world today. I think that taking it down, if we do that as a whole, we're just hiding away what actually happened in the past and not letting people know, like, hey, you know, this is what really happened. We're kind of like sweeping it under the rug and making it look like it never happened. Don't worry about it. Keep your mouth shut. Racism never existed. And that's basically what we're doing by taking the statues down and destroying them. Maybe a museum and let people know, like, hey, our country was messed up back then. And now everything's changed here. We're getting better to be more equal with everybody, all races, all colors and everything. And that's what we should do in this world now.
Sounds good. Alexander, thank you. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Thank you. Bill wants to chime in. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. Just after the news break with Steve, that seems like a very tiny subject to talk about.
You're right.
With memorials. I just want you to know that I lived in Chattanooga, which was near Battlefield, so I'm a history buff.
Yeah.
Not a nut, but a buff.
Yeah.
And I'm getting tired of this stuff, of destroying things that actually happened, because what are they going to do? Are they going to blow up, Stone Mountain down in Atlanta that has all the statues that are like Mount Rushmore? And also, do people realize that, going back further, the defenders of the Alamo, okay,
mm-hmm.
90% of them were slaveholders, and Mexico had freed the slaves 10 years before the battle. So, I mean, are you going to blow up the Alamo because it had slaveholders? I mean, I know this sounds silly, but come on, give it a break. It's tiring. Just leave this stuff alone. It's our history. That's
what,
it.
What about the flag? You know, there's been this has been going on for years, the controversy about the Confederate flag being still flown in the South. What are your thoughts on that? Same thing?
Well, my thoughts are so far, and I'm not trying to reveal what party, but this president that we have is bringing out people like the Klan that represent that flag. And I have a flag just like that that's buried in my chest in the garage. I don't fly it. And I think it's ridiculous that they do fly it. I mean, it's fun to make silly things about it and all that. But after that, forget it. It's done. It's over. You lost. I mean, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. We've got so many things to worry about. Like I said, that news break. The heck with this.
Right. I get it. Bill, thanks.
Okay,
appreciate
it. And just to Wendy, would you just tell her for me?
I'm right here. Socks?
Yeah, she's
here. I'm here.
She's over there.
Hi,
Wendy, go Sox.
I'm with you, Bill.
Okay.
Go Sox. And the flag, again, part of history, I don't know that it should be flying. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But what it represents now shouldn't be what it represented then.
Shouldn't be.
I know, but unfortunately, there are people that hold on to those beliefs still.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem lies. So it's not the artifacts. It's the hearts of the people behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's it exactly.
All right. I think we have time for one more. And let's go to Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I was wondering if anybody had any thoughts on the Confederate mound that's in the Oakwood Cemetery on the south side of Chicago. There's like 6,000 soldiers buried there that died in Camp Douglas in Chicago, Confederate soldiers. And that monument was put up by the Daughters of the Confederacy. And it's a huge monument.
Is it bothersome to you, Kathy?
No, I have an ancestor there.
Yeah.
His name is on the monument.
It's a grave marker, right? I mean, essentially?
Yes, and it's huge.
I think that's different from statues in public squares. And sometimes statues, and some of these statues that we're talking about, and not all of them, I don't think, but some of these statues were put up in the civil rights era and the Jim Crow days as reminders. So that's more than just the person who's on the horse. It's the moment or the mm-hmm. time that those were put up and the message they were sending when they were built 50 or 60 years ago.
No, I agree. I think this was put up in the 1890s, though, so maybe about 30 years later.
It does seem different if it's a memorial type of thing.
I would agree that, but it definitely, you know, promotes the Confederacy. And
that's the problem.
Yeah.
All right.
But I do like the artwork there. I think it's a great monument. And the soldiers that were there, a lot of them, including my ancestors, they were very young when they died. And they were poor Southern people.
And again, when I went down south and we went to the Civil War museums and stuff, I was kind of blown away by the history of it. And
me
it
too.
Was interesting to see
but
all
no,
these.
But nobody's saying, I don't think anybody's saying that this should be taken out of museums
right.
or not taught in schools.
But to see the actual battleground of the Battle of Corinth, and there were
right.
monuments there to me that meant more seeing that for some reason. I don't know
because
why.
Because it happened right then and
at
right
that
there,
point.
Right there, yeah.
But just
right.
other people just having a monument just to not marking any specific territory.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's right. I
yeah.
don't know. That's what
yeah.
the problem is, Kathy. I don't know what's
either.
Right. Thank
I
you
agree.
Very much for calling, though. We appreciate right. it.
Thank you.
But you agree. We had a caller, Alexandra, said a little while ago, it's not the statues themselves.
Right.
And I agree with that 100%.
It's the hate behind them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Got to stop this hating. It's just... you know, we talked to Tom Mikaitis yesterday, a professor and also a terrorism expert, and he gave me a little bit of hope when he said, you know, it's usually worse before there's some change happening.
Yeah.
I hope he's right.
Yeah. Let's hope so. We'll find out.
Damn it, I'm proud to be an American.
Look at you. All right, we'll take a break.
No We've break. Got news. No
oh,
break.
We will not take
no,
a break.
We refuse. Not take a
we
break.
Don't know what a break is. We will not take any breaks.
We're breakless.
This is Chicago's very own 720. Later, we'll take a break. We can't just do the whole show without a break. I get tired.
Thank you, Steve. We have an old friend in the studio. Well, she's not old.
Not that old. We've had older people in the studio.
Middle-aged.
That's fair. Ann Johnsos, who was the producer for Steve's show for how long, Ann?
Well, I produced Steve. Steve, when did you take it over? Not very long, because it was Bob and Marianne.
Well, Steve Cochran.
Oh, Steve. Yeah, that was about just a year for that one. Yeah.
And prior to that?
But I was teaching at Northwestern before that, so they kind of lured me back into the melee.
Every time you try to get out,
yeah,
they pull you back in.
Yes.
That's how it works.
But I was here for that whole time when everyone was all excited about rebuilding and you guys got back together.
Yeah.
And it was a good time.
It was a fun time. We miss seeing you every day.
I you know what's so funny? I get to hear you every day, so I don't. Oh. I feel like I'm still here.
Oh, that's we don't
excellent.
Listen to our
no,
show.
We've not heard the show.
But I keep track of you on Facebook, and I see these adorable little things that your daughters say to you. Your daughters, their names, their ages.
So Sophie is now 11, and Hannah is 8, and I've been writing down what they say since they were about 2. So, but yeah, they are growing fast. And you and I were just talking about how quickly it goes and how much you miss it when they get smarter than you.
You should.
And taller than you.
Yeah.
You should write a book about these things.
No, I'm not really interested
in
writing.
You're not into writing a book?
Yeah, no.
Actually. Miraculously. The book Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, is coming out. Now, it's not available yet, but it's available for pre-order.
Right. It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I told Kevin, I never thought you'd be able to Google Ann Johnsos and Potty Mouthed and come up with an actual...
I'm proud of that, actually. I wish my name would come up.
I'll add you to the list.
All right. You know what it reminds me a little bit? And I don't know if you'll remember this, but there was a guy a long time ago named Art Linkletter, and he had a show called Kids Say the Darndest Things, in which he'd put a kid on a stool, and he'd ask him a question, the kid would be adorable.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, Bill Cosby did this too,
he did
right?
It too, yeah.
Where and it wasn't that they were cute, like saccharine, sweet. They're mean or they're honest.
It's genuine though. That's
yeah.
the bottom line.
Yeah, that's it. But isn't there's mean and honest at the same time sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the things I call the kids is the meanest kind of truth tellers, because they just see what they see and they react to it, and often it's hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book though is really about how our kids, my husband's, my kids, keep us in check and keep us super humble because we've done so many things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's kind of a how not to parenting book.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, do you have to ask permission about these silly little things that your daughters have said before you put it in the book?
I did. So I've written down, you know, hundreds of these things, and I went through and they were laughing themselves silly. They're like, we're funny. But then if there was ever something I wrote that made me look mean,
yeah.
they told me to take it out.
Oh.
They told you, or yeah. you said, I'm not putting that in?
No, my 11-year-old Sophie was like, no, people won't like you if you put that in. And I'm like, what? Are you an audience analyst? What's
That's,
going
she's
on here?
Smart.
She's like, she knows her market.
Yeah.
So there was one time, and I can say this now because it's not going to be in the book, but she asked me, I had some marks near my eyebrows, and she said, what's that? And I'm like, it's a classic case of overplucking. And she's like, you pluck your eyebrows like I pluck my violin? And I was like, yeah, I guess,
kind of.
And then she's like, do your eyebrows make music? And I was like, does your violin?
Wow. Wow. It got confrontational.
Yeah, she made me take that one out.
Oh, that one's good, though.
Did you know when you started writing these down, because I'm guessing they were very, very young once you started jotting these down, did you say to yourself then, this could eventually end up in a book?
Not
no,
even
you just
thinking
did it to
of it.
Remember it.
And in fact, I brought in sort of the original, what we originally wrote things down in, which was a notebook
yeah.
as opposed to Facebook.
Yeah.
And it would be, we'd get the kids to bed, we'd open a bottle of wine, and then we'd go through what they said that day.
Right.
And you know, and we thought we were hilarious. And you can tell by the handwriting that we definitely drank the bottle of wine.
There's something in here about wine that
saw. Yeah.
Why don't you,
we got to find it.
I can't find the best one, but it cracks me up.
Is this the one where pint-sized wisdom?
Yes.
Three-year-old, food makes you big and strong. Wine makes you a happy family.
Wow. How well put.
Ooh, it sure does. Yeah.
So did you have to do the thing that parents always do, like at holiday time, at Christmas time, where you make sure that all the kids get an even amount of gifts? Did you make sure that each daughter was represented equally in the book?
You know, I didn't. And the older one has gone through, and she's like, why are there more of the younger one? I'm like, well,
no.
Because we didn't start writing things down when you were itty-bitty. And so it's an interesting balance. But she gets some really good ones, but not as many.
You know, it's usually the opposite. For most parents, that first child gets most of the accolades and attention in book form. You know,
right.
We had a book, both my brother and I, baby's first years or something like that. And mine is filled out in such incredible detail. And in my brother's, it's a page, and then 6 months later, it's a page, and then 8 months later, it's a page.
Well, with my older one, I had that baby book too. And the only thing I wrote in it was at 4 months old, she rolled over, and I was like, oh my God, she made a milestone. So I wrote it down, and then I was like, I should probably figure out the rest of this stuff too, but I didn't, because I was overwhelmed. Wendy, you had babies in your 30s, right?
Yeah.
It was so
35
hard.
35 and 40.
Yeah, 35 and 37 for me, and I was so overwhelmed, I didn't know what I was doing. So
I saved their first clip of hair.
Okay.
It's all stuffed in the book, and my boys found the books. Michael's has a little bit more, you know, it was like you could get all the information, like from the birth certificate, like what time you were born.
Right.
Dylan's doesn't even have that.
Right. Or like photo albums, you know, like my oldest brother had a huge, thick photo album. My little sister's got like 6 photos, right? Because you stopped taking pictures.
And they get lost somewhere in your iPhone. I do have pictures of Michael when Dylan was born. There are some. But now when you take pictures, they're in the cloud somewhere, and very rarely do you print them up and put an album together, and I'm a terrible mom because of that.
I agree, and I went through all the media that, you know, we've kind of collected, and I was like, who's ever going to look at this?
I know.
You know, I must have like 17 hours of like jumperoo, you know? I'm like, wow, look at, she's jumping some more.
Yeah.
You know,
still jumping.
Stupid.
Look at more jumping.
Whoa.
Although I want to ask, Bill, I don't know about you, maybe your wife, but I doubt it. If Facebook was around when my kids were babies, I would have been that mom who put my stuff up there all the time. You not?
We would not have. No. Nope.
You're private?
It's not even privacy.
You think, who cares?
Yeah.
But it's kind of for the family that doesn't live around you, because my great niece was born, and my niece puts a lot of pictures and videos on Instagram and Facebook, and I'm thankful she does, because I don't see her that often.
Right. Oh, that makes sense, I guess.
So Kevin can start doing pictures of his new niece.
Yes.
Right?
As of today.
Yeah.
There will be a lot of, on his Facebook page, it'll be filled with pictures of Michaela.
But there was
with
an
the
onion.
Spelling.
An Onion article today that talks about parent now just typing 4-year-old child's every word verbatim throughout day as Facebook post. And someone sent it to me, and I was like, ooh, this is hitting close to home.
Yeah, not far from the truth, is it?
not too far.
The new book is called Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains. Ann Johnson is its author. It's not out yet, but it'll be out, when would you say? It will be out by
November
Christmas time?
7th.
Oh, November. Perfect.
Yep. And,
perfect.
A stocking stuffer.
I know, yeah. And it will be...
Or turkey stuffer.
I just had to stop there for a minute.
It's possible.
Because you can stuff it somewhere.
Right.
But it is available for pre-order on Amazon. So if you're, although, you know, it's so funny, it went up on Amazon and then it immediately they dropped the price. I'm like, what are you doing to me? What's going on?
Wait, you don't decide that? They decide
they
that?
Amazon decided what price.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that existed that way.
It does. I didn't either.
Wow.
This is a big learning curve.
You'll sell more.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I do encourage people, if you've got a local bookstore that you love, go and ask, because then they get the money, as opposed to the great big Amazon.
When you're something weird, like, Wendy has Amazon Prime, and she's already got the book delivered, and you haven't even finished it yet.
It hasn't even finished yet.
That's
sorry
how good
about the missing drawings.
That's crazy. All right, a quick break, and then more discussion. If you want to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ann Johnsos is here, former WGN producer. You did everything here.
Professor.
What did you, professor.
Uh-huh. So I started in 94 producing Bob Collins as a fill-in because his producer went on maternity leave.
Oh.
And then I took over for Roy Leonard, producing him, not actually being him. Because that would have been really weird.
Although you tried.
I did try.
Not successful.
He looked good in a suit, I'll tell you.
He would always say, hey, man, hey, man. And in fact, I was listening to you yesterday. In 1994, there was an eclipse.
Yes.
And we were all out on Pioneer Court, and I got a spot on my eye. I looked at the sun, and now when I close my eyes.
You still see that?
Yeah. So I was going to call
you
in.
You burnt your
retina. I did. Yeah.
I never met anyone. Can you autograph your book for me?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Can you autograph your retina for me?
Yeah, I did. Yes.
I would love to have that in my collection. Her book is called Potty Mouth, Big Thoughts from Little Brains. She's taken all the adorable things that her daughters have said. You didn't use anybody else's kids, just your daughters,
just
right?
Just mine, although it has been suggested that it become a forum because everybody's got, and they're not adorable things so much. Some of them are downright mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, funny. So, but it could be a forum because everyone's got a story. And in fact, I think, Wendy, you were writing down some things.
Yeah, just a couple of things. There are this book makes me laugh and it makes me kind of sad because I remember my teenage boys being this age saying goofy things. When I had asked Michael one morning, do you want bacon or sausage with your eggs? And he's like, I want sausages. So to this day, like if we're ordering a pizza or something, Michael will go, can we get sausages on it?
Right.
And then Dylan, at one point, there was a tornado warning. He was pretty little. We had to go down in the basement. The siren was going off. And he's like, are you scared? And I'm like, no, not really. But we just have to be on the safe side. And he's like, I am so scared of the tomato.
Oh.
So now whenever there's a tomato warning, we say that too. So there are little things we remember that they have said to us. And I think Tom wanted to share one. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very good. How are you? I have a 2.5-year-old grandson, you know, and watching him grow up because I didn't get to see my kids grow up that well because I was always working. And so we're waiting for that first day when he said, I love you, Papa. And, oh, you know, you melt. You think, oh, what a great little guy. He's great. And then my wife and I are taking him out to lunch and driving down the road. And unfortunately, someone cut my wife off and she says, blank hole. And what a blank hole, and all of a sudden in the back seat, the little guy starts saying, then we got to say some other word to get him to say it. So the first day he said, I love you, Papa, he also said his first swear word.
What a day.
Why is it so cute when kids swear, but not intentionally? It's
right.
Like they're learning from us.
Yeah.
He just mimics us, and that's all we have to definitely watch our language around because he's just a little minor bird now, and so we have to be very cautious around.
Thanks for sharing that, Tom. We appreciate it.
And one night, my wife made dinner, and it doesn't happen very often. She doesn't like to cook, and she's not the best cook, so we usually eat out. But that particular night, she tried making something with chicken, and I don't remember what else was in there. There was some kind of vegetable, and there was some sort of cheese, but it just wasn't very good. And the four of us were sitting around the table, and we were all eating it and talking about other things. My wife finally said, well, what you guys haven't told me. What do you think of the chicken? And I didn't want to say anything, and the girls didn't want to say anything. But finally, one of my daughters said, Mom, the important thing is that you tried.
Oh, my gosh. That's like reverse roles, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So eventually, your goal is for this to be not just one book, but a series of books.
Right. So this is the Big Thoughts from Little Brains, and then the idea. And in fact, Steve Alexander came up with that tagline, Big Thoughts from Little Brains, and that would go to Big Thoughts from Medium-Sized Brains.
Oh.
Big Thoughts from... Well, they'll never be big brains, let's be honest, right? So, but
don't put that in the book.
No, I can't put that. Yeah, I get in trouble. So, because they get funnier as they get older.
Sure, of course.
But I didn't want to start with the gold.
Yeah.
So this book is just it's a training book.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And Steve Alexander's going to want half the cut on this.
I know.
Don't let him intimidate you.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Can you share this one about you wearing makeup?
This is one I thought maybe it would be a book. All right, so it's called... Everyone's a critic. 5-year-old, Mommy, why don't you wear makeup when you drive me to school? Me, why? I'm just dropping you off. I don't even get out of the car. 5-year-old, the car has windows.
Mean yet funny.
Yes, mean but funny. Yes.
Did you miss it a little bit when your daughter stopped talking in little kid voice? You know what I mean? Because the kids have that voice that you just did, but at some point they stopped. Didn't that bug you?
I kind of delayed speech therapy for this very reason. Because yeah. I loved
that.
I know. It's so sweet. But then I actually, for the 8-year-old Hannah, I had her evaluated finally, and the speech therapist was like, well, she can say her R's. She just chooses not to.
Oh,
and
I'm wow.
like, and so she keeps telling me that she's actually British. I'm like, okay, that's what it is.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. My daughters used to, if they would get for Christmas a gift certificate, they could not say the word certificate, but they wouldn't give up on it. So sometimes we'd be there for 5 or 10 minutes while they tried to say certificate. And both my wife and I would say, oh, I dread the day that they're able to say it. I hope they never learn how to say it. And they can't.
Have they learned?
Yeah. Neither of them can. It's adorable. They're only 20.
It's so sweet.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yes.
Jim has a little thing he wants to share with us, too. A nice little memory, Jim?
Well, it's the story of my sister when she had her son and caring for him. And as he was growing up, starting to talk, she had taken him in the bathroom where she could take a bath. And as she got finally stood up out of the shower, her son looked up at her all puzzled and said, Mommy, what happened to your tail?
Wow.
A front tail.
Wow.
Realized that the mommy didn't have a front tail.
Yeah.
Jim, thank you.
That's always the day to remember.
The day you lost your tail.
Yeah.
But see, these are things we remember. They're so silly. But the bottom line is kids are genuine. They're just real. They're not trying to be politically correct or nice. They're just honest.
One of my other favorites was when one of them said, why do you have so many wrinkles? And I was like, I don't, they're not wrinkles, they're laugh lines. Yeah. And they looked at each other and they're like, we must be pretty funny.
That's beautiful.
Good luck with this. Potty mouth, big thoughts from little brains. Her name is Ann Johnsos. Drawings by John Britton. Give mm-hmm. him some credit. It's adorable. It's available for pre-sale on Amazon, but also go into your favorite bookstore and tell them to order Potty Mouth for you so you can buy it there. We look forward to your sequels.
Okay, well, I thank you guys so much for
having
me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And next week, your daughters are coming on. They've written a book about some crazy things that you've said.
Yeah.
You can't wait to
find
that.
Missing my tail, apparently.
Right. Apparently. Ann, thanks so much. Great to see you.
Thanks, guys.
A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys tea. Dean, 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 Dean.
You know who he is?
Oh, he's Dean. He's definitely Dean, and he's Dean Richards to top that.
What it says on my driver's license.
Mine too.
Dean Richards?
Yeah. It says Dean Richards on my driver's license.
Wait a minute.
You have a typo, Bill.
I might have a typo. On Facebook, and I don't know if this is a new thing or they just put this up again, but they show everybody who works on the WGN TV morning news pictures of them when they were like 7 or 8 or 9 years old.
Yes.
And there's a picture of you up there and you were 7 or 8 or 9 years old.
We did, what's it called? Thursday, Flashback Thursday.
Throwback Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Flashback Thursday.
Flashback Thursday.
Become my dad. What do you kids call this? What's this flashback, fumbledy, mumbledy junk? Yeah, we did one of those today, throwback. And that is my picture from sixth grade.
Can I say, this is what my first thought was when I saw it, because I had never seen you as a child before. And I thought to myself, Dean looks angelic, but with a slightly devilish twist.
I've heard that a lot today.
Yeah.
Yeah, people have said that a lot today.
Yeah.
I would say that's pretty accurate.
Is it? Yeah.
That year in particular, I probably got in the most trouble I ever got in school in sixth grade. Because there were like a core of three of us.
Yeah.
You know, like, three best friends. And somehow one of us got, not me,
no.
Got a job working in the school's office.
Yeah.
And was able to procure the teacher's home phone numbers.
Oh, valuable information.
So one night at my house, nobody was home.
Before call waiting was around.
Yes.
Or ID.
I thought that I was going to, at an early age, use my vocal skills
yeah.
early. My voice was low
yeah.
early.
So we called the teachers. We didn't do Prince Albert in the can or is your refrigerator running? I don't even know what we did, but basically the voices all sounded like that.
Oh.
Like we were disguising the voices.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd get mad and hang up, and, you know, we'd hang up the phone laughing, rolling around hysterically on the floor. That, hey, we got Mrs. So-and-so. We let you know that was funny. We really got... but then, of course, the next morning, going to school, we could not help but brag
about
our accomplishments.
Aww. That's your downfall.
Somebody ratted on us. And,
yeah, you did.
Well, we did rat on ourselves. That's very true bragging about our conquest. And, did I get in trouble.
Sure.
Got in now, trouble Dean... at school, invasion of privacy. My sixth grade teacher, who may have been marching in Charlottesville, that's how mean she was.
Oh, no.
That's how nasty and mean she was. She was going to call the FBI on me.
Wow.
And,
it very seriously.
My dad's belt got a really good workout that summer.
You should have said that you were with the school district and that classes were canceled in the morning. There are no school classes in the morning. Did you even think of that?
No. We were just more about making funny voices.
Oh.
Here's the difference between sixth grade boys and sixth grade girls. I had access to passes to get your friends out of class, and I could forge my mom's signature pretty well, and that's what we did.
Oh, that's
we didn't
brilliant.
Prank call teachers.
That's genius.
It was stupid prank. It was such... You know, if it was something good, like, you know, a good scheme, we needed Bill in our evil cabal.
I would have been happy to have helped with your evil cabal. Yeah. I love evil cabals.
Hello, is Mrs. Smith there?
Right.
You could have been the original Bart Simpson with the prank phone calls to Mo.
We wanted to hear them perplexed, and then we'd start laughing and hang up.
But that bit you just did was funnier than the Jerky Boys. Hey, here's some good news, Dean. I know that we need good news now more than ever, and Daniel Craig will be James Bond again, huh?
That is good news, I think.
Yeah.
Do you think it is?
I think it's great
news. Did you have any doubt? Come on. I know he said no, but he's not going to walk away from that.
Well, on Stephen Colbert the other night, he said that quote that he made, that he'd rather, rip out his eyes?
Yeah, or something like that.
Something like that, than play James Bond again. He said, he explained it, because Stephen Colbert called him on it, and he said that he was asked 2 days after they finished shooting the last James Bond movie, and he was completely wiped out. And just, he responded poorly.
Right.
Should have been more diplomatic. But that's what he said, and that's what he said, so, you know, he apologized for that. But he said that he's definitely going to do one more movie.
And that's it.
Yeah. And
He
said, that's out. One and out. And it'll be out December of 2019, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what the date was. They haven't named it yet. 25th James Bond movie. This makes him the third most used actor as James Bond. Sean Connery did 7. Roger Moore did 7. And this will be the 5th one for Daniel Craig.
Wow. You know what's cool about him, Dean? I don't know if you picked up on this, too. But as he's sitting there with Stephen Colbert, now keep in mind, when he plays James Bond, there is not a trace of smile in him. He's as stern as can be.
Right.
He's always solemn, always has a grim look on his face. You could tickle him, he would laugh, but he wouldn't smile. But when he's sitting there...
Next time I interview him...
Tickle him.
Gucci,
But when he's sitting there with Stephen Colbert, he's nothing but smiles.
Yeah. Yeah, he was enjoying himself. And he and his wife, Rachel Weitz, apparently, they all have a nice relationship because they were kind of teasing around that she flirts with Stephen Colbert, and Colbert, you know, flirts with her.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was nice. It was nice to see him in such a comfortable interview, because especially the last couple of times that we interviewed him for probably the James Bond movies, might have been something else, he just seems so uncomfortable. And
does
so,
he really? Yeah.
The very first time I interviewed him was when he was Paul Newman's son in Road to Perdition.
Oh, right.
And it was right here in Chicago. I don't remember where we interviewed him. But, you know, he was the sort of the guy that really nobody was that interested in talking to from the movie. Because you had Paul Newman.
I was at that same junket, and I was as you were saying that, I was thinking, I remember turning that one down. Because I talked to everybody on the movie except for him, because nobody knew who he was at the time.
Right. At the time, nobody knew who the guy was. There, you know, you got Paul Newman, you got Tom Hanks, you had Jude Law.
Yeah.
The kids were from Road to Perdition were all interesting and kind of a crucial part of this. And then there was this guy who played Paul Newman's son.
Nobody was in that one
Nobody
at all.
Nobody had an idea. So they said, do you want to talk to him? I honestly, I felt bad for the guy that nobody was talking to him. So I was like, yeah, I mean, it's not going to kill me to sit down with him for 7 minutes and
Dean, the kids, those two kids from the movie, Tom Hanks' sons, nobody had heard of them, but everybody went, well, this will be fun. These two kids, they've never been in we'll movies before. That room was jam-packed, and you walked past Roger Craig's room, and it was just Dean and a cleaning woman. That was all that was in the room.
Daniel Craig. No, yeah.
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, and even the Roger cleaning Craig woman wouldn't talk to him.
Right.
She wouldn't even.
That's sad.
When she walked in the room, she wouldn't go, housekeeping.
Nothing.
She wouldn't even do that.
Right. It was awful.
Yeah, poor guy. Oh, that's. Yeah, I felt bad for him. But it's always been very pleasant to talk to him, and he's always had a pretty good sense of humor, and we've been able to goof around a little bit, except the last couple of movies. Where
I wonder why.
He just looked like he was kind of stressed out and sick of talking to us dopes.
Oh, no.
Did
Bond
go to his head, maybe?
I didn't get that sense. I think a lot of these people, you know, like Harrison Ford and some of the others that have reputations of not being good interviews, my observation is they're not good interviews when you're not a good interviewer.
Oh, that's true.
If you ask stupid questions, ridiculous things, and believe me, I have seen some unbelievably embarrassing things that, thank goodness, most of the time it's somebody else. Right. I'm not going to say I've never done it. I'm sure I have. I'm sure if you go back and listen to some of my early ones, I've thrown in some whoppers of idiot questions. But I seriously don't know how they sit through some of these interviews of the most inane, ridiculous questions, and I'm not sure that I would really be able to keep my patience.
It would be hard to sit through
if
that.
If you're going to talk to hundreds of people all the time, and they're asking ridiculous things.
Boxers or briefs?
Yeah, that one's going to come up.
That's a good
one. Hasn't Bruce Willis got surlier as time has gone on?
Yes,
he has, right?
Yep. Yeah, he has. Much more reserved.
Yeah.
Less giving, and in part, like, you really have to engage him.
Yeah.
I find that, and I'll bet you guys do too, because you guys do fantastic interviews when you have people, and you have to find something to engage the person in the interview, because otherwise for them it's just, okay, I got to spend a half an hour here.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens. If you don't find some way to kind of get them excited, it's not going to be very interesting for anybody.
But sometimes it's difficult. If you have a guest who's just given yes and no answers.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Jerry Lewis.
Oh, my God. That's classic.
You've seen that clip of him, right?
Oh, where
that poor kid interviewing him. Yeah. It was not a great interviewer, I'll say that much.
Right. Yeah.
But he was so mean.
Right.
I don't know. I don't get it. I interviewed Jerry Lewis Weinstein, and it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. He couldn't have been nicer, but then I've seen clips of him with other people where you just go, oh, no.
Right. I've had him both ways.
Yeah.
I've had him where he's really nice, and I've had him where
it's a nightmare.
Yeah, he can completely be a nightmare. I don't know if I ever told you the Tommy Lee Jones story. The very first time, I had heard that he was an incredibly difficult interview.
Yeah.
And that he famously gave one word answers, which is, no interviewer wants to hear that their subject is only going to give one word answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I came prepared with a lot of questions that I figured, well, he can give me one word answers. I'm not going to run out of questions.
Good.
So as I was walking into the room to interview him, a young journalist was walking out, a young female journalist, probably about 20, 25 years old, was walking out in tears. Ugh. She was crying. And as I walked into Tommy Lee Jones, he was sitting there laughing hysterically.
Oh, no.
Going, boy, I sure got her good. Oh. Didn't I? He was laughing with his people. Boy, she just could not handle it. And he thought it was hilarious that he shook her to the core.
Oh.
And I just thought, that is...
That's terrible.
That's just mean. That's just mean.
It is just mean.
So mean. And so when I sat down with him, and he's given me the one-word answer business, expecting to shake me to the core, because as the interviewer, you want to fill in the quiet spots.
Of course.
Yeah.
You want to keep the conversation going. And he wasn't saying anything, and either was I. And he was staring at me, and I was staring at him. And it was just a staring contest. And it's I ran the interview as it was. It's hilariously funny to watch because I ask what I think is a reasonably interesting question. He goes, nope.
Oh.
And he's just staring at me, and I'm not saying anything. And
Dean, could you say to him at the beginning, Mr. Lee Jones, could you just give me one-word answers? I would appreciate it. The shorter the answer, the better, just to see what he would do.
Right. Is
then he'd be singing like a canary.
Right.
Could you give me half-word questions? Maybe a contraction?
Right.
Part of a contraction?
Just a nod. If you could just nod up and down.
The big
left
question
and right.
is, did he walk out of there crying? Did you get him?
That'd be great. Then you got something. Dean Richards is our guest. He will tell you which movies are coming out this weekend next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dean Richards is our guest. Speaking of Daniel Craig, and I did say Roger Craig earlier, he managed the San Francisco Giants. As it turns out, I just checked his IMDb page. He never played James Bond in a single movie.
Not yet.
Not yet. Speaking of Daniel Craig, he's in a new movie called Logan Lucky. Is that the right name?
Logan Lucky.
What is Logan Lucky?
Logan Lucky is
a dumb name.
The two big movies that are opening this week both are kind of genres formats that we've seen before. Logan Lucky is a heist movie, and we've seen a million of these heist movies. You know, like the Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
I think one of the best movies of this year, which is essentially a heist movie, Baby Driver, which is, I think, top five of the year.
Wow.
Maybe even higher.
Yeah.
But this Logan Lucky is a heist movie where everything goes wrong. And the people...
The story of Bill's life, yep. If he was a robber.
That's right.
Left Lucky.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie where there are a bunch of country folk, and they decide that they're going to pull a scam at the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a stretch to think of our rural community and NASCAR in the same sentence, but that's where that goes. But it's this kind of an Appalachian take on a heist movie, but very clever. Very funny, very well written. It's not it most very definitely is Appalachian stereotypes, but it's written in such a clever way. I actually really enjoyed this. Really, nobody knows what they're doing in the movie. The people in the heist crew are a one-armed bartender, a beautician. A safe cracker and just like dopey, bumbling, stumbling numbskulls that I found very, very entertaining. In addition to Daniel Craig, or as we like to call him in show business circles, Roger Craig.
Yeah.
You got a Channing Tatum in this movie. You've got an Adam Driver from Star Wars.
Oh,
you've got
Baby Driver's brother.
Katie Holmes, older brother.
Wow, this is star-studded.
Yeah, it's
Elvis's granddaughter, right?
Is Elvis's granddaughter in the movie?
Riley Keough?
I did not notice that
in
the credits.
I thought she was in there.
Okay, all right.
Maybe not.
I enjoyed.
She's in Roger Craig's movie.
Right. She's in the new Roger Craig.
There's a whole development with the Roger Craig Production Corporation that just, honestly, just got started in the last 5 minutes. So I'm giving this a Dean's List B.
I'm glad. And it's Steven Soderbergh, right? Who said
Steven
he wasn't going to direct anymore?
Steven Soderbergh, I forgot to mention.
But he did.
Yep. Directed it. And I think this, didn't he do the first Ocean's movie?
Yes. Yeah,
and he did that sort of brilliant Behind the Candelabra, the Liberace movie. He's so good, and this is so different from everything else that he does. He's just such a good director.
Good.
It is Riley Keough who plays the Logan brothers' hairdresser's sister, Melly, the only woman in this group, and that's Elvis's granddaughter.
Elvis's granddaughter. She should put that in the credits.
Yeah, baby. That's my granddaughter.
Lisa Marie's baby girl.
I've been
girl.
Dead for 40 years, but that's my granddaughter.
Yep.
You ever been to Graceland, Bill?
No. Want to go? Let's go.
You don't want to go. I do, and I can't believe I haven't been there yet.
Oh.
I've been there.
It's awesome, isn't it?
I went there expecting the worst, and at the end of the whole thing, I'm standing at Elvis's grave openly weeping.
Is that true?
I was so moved by everything that I saw.
Wow. All right. Maybe I will go.
You should go. Especially, right. I mean, I know you love pop culture.
He doesn't like Elvis,
I'm not
though.
An Elvis fan.
So you shouldn't go.
I went not especially as an Elvis fan. I was assigned to do a documentary.
Yeah.
And I went kicking and screaming because I wasn't especially a fan, not the way you want to be a fan
if
you're doing a documentary. So I thought, well, this is not going to be a pretty documentary. But when you get down there, you wind up having a new admiration for what Elvis meant to people. Mm-hmm. It may not have meant something to you, but you really realize that it was profoundly meaningful to a lot of people. And I still have, you know, there's souvenir stores everywhere.
Yeah.
I still have a packet of Elvis sweat.
Oh, my God. How much was that?
It might have been $5 or $10. Ridiculously,
oh, not bad.
Considering what it is, it's literally like a wet nap you'd get if you went to a rib place. But they claim that the water that they use to make the wet naps was infused with some of the sweaty scarves that Elvis used to wear on his neck. So technically, there is Elvis DNA in the.
Oh, that's
make an
excellent.
Elvis clone. Will you hurry up? There's your documentary.
There you go. I think I have that someplace, and an Elvis like a really cheesy Elvis clock.
Oh, that's well,
like his hands, his arms. You know,
you made out like a bandit there.
I tried to find the cheesiest stuff I could possibly find.
Sounds like you did.
And believe me, it wasn't that hard.
Dean, do me a favor because we only have 10 seconds. Just Hitman's Bodyguard.
Ryan Reynolds, Samuel Jackson. Take a pass on it.
Not worth it.
It's every movie that you've ever seen where the bad guy is being protected by a bodyguard to get him to a trial because he has to testify or else the case is going to be blown.
Midnight Run.
These two guys, the bodyguard and the guy he's guarding, hate each other's guts. So it's confrontation from the word go. Couldn't be more cliche-filled. I like Samuel L. Jackson and Ryan Reynolds both, but the movie's a disappointment only because of their charisma.
Yeah.
The movie really is... To give it a C is
you're
a,
being kind
a lot.
That's the kind and gentle Dean Richards. Everybody,
that's
watch
me,
him
Tommy
on the
Lee Jones, if you're listening.
Morning News, and such a great job over the weekend with your special.
Oh, thank
boy,
you.
Was that good! That was
thank
so
you.
Good.
Thank you.